The Burrows of Berea is a conversational podcast.
We study the Bible and we talk about it.
Not all of us are of the same faith.
And one of us doesn't have a faith.
But we still love one another, and we're going to continue to talk about these things.
The things we believe in and the things we believe about what we read in the Bible. Not all of these are necessarily true. Some of it is opinion and speculation. Thank you for
listening and speculating with us.
There you go. That was good. Yes. Stomps.
You are listening to the Burrows of Berea.
Well, welcome back to the Burrows of Berea. I am Rick Welch, and to my left is Tiziana, Mom So Hard Subverse.
I'm setting a timer.
Is that how your mom is so hard?
Mom is so hard
You're
today.
Setting the timer.
I'm setting a timer. You got a 5-minute timer.
Yeah, we had an egg timer.
We gotta go.
Mm-hmm. We had an egg timer and a wooden ladle with a hole in it.
Okay,
that was second to beat piece. You with.
Yeah, that second one I had that is a relic also from my childhood. I chose not to bring with me
it's a relic.
This go awesome. Round. But yeah, like the little, I just got a bunch of them too, like these little, 5, 10, 15, 30 minute timers. Yeah. Setting a timer is critical when you have toddlers.
Yes.
Is it visual? They need a visual aid because you like, they don't understand things timers? Like 5 minutes. They don't know what that means.
Right.
Is it the sand timer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I got like 5 of them. They look like, you know, remember Days of Our Lives?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Got a bunch of those. But anyway, yeah. That's how Mom's Hard today. I'm setting a timer.
That's how you're doing it. And mm-hmm. to my right is Rick Big Daddy Carter.
Oh, yeah.
So nice.
Isn't it?
And behind the glass, behind the door, behind the second door, and into the depth is Rocket Man Andy Bishop.
You guys really missed out on the cavalier and fun and sprightly way that I just entered the room.
You look like Sir Robin dancing with the coconuts.
And now you'll never see it, and that's too bad for you.
I can't.
Although, if you have seen the Three Amigos, go watch them sing My Little Buttercup. You'll have an idea.
It's kind of, yeah,
similar.
And for the record,
or Robin Hood Men in Tights.
For the record, I cannot unsee that, Andy. Yeah. Is it?
Every time you enter a room, please enter that way.
It's like Kramer, but I kind of do it with like a hop and a little bit of joy in my step.
Yeah.
So
guys, I have been trying to have this interview since September, actually. My guest, Alan Bondar, he wrote a book titled How to Kill God the Easy Way. And so That's by its title, it's obvious that book is about quilting and scrapbooking, the two pillars of American colonialism.
Pretty heavy.
No, but the way I was introduced to him was literally by a Facebook post where he put it out and was asking for 50 Christians. And I believe it was 50, maybe it was 40. I don't know. We talked about that today. That 50 Christians or 40 Christians would read his book.
Could you find that many?
And give him feedback. Well, he did. He found 40.
Okay.
And we'll get into why I decided to become a part of that test group later on. But we'll just get started right out of the gate. Welcome, Alan Bondar.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate it, and everybody. Appreciate you guys having me here. This is great.
Yeah, he was supposed to be here in September. We had already booked the flights and everything, and then Hurricane Helene hit. And he said, geez, Rick, you know, every time I try to come down here, I'm like the Antichrist. You know, I was like, okay. And then
fires.
Exactly.
Destruction.
So he's flying down here, and I sent him a text with a picture, and I was like, our mountains are on fire.
Yeah.
If you want to.
Thanks, brother.
Now, listen, we're not done. So he arrives, and on the day he's supposed to come to my house, Holly gets up to go get a cup of coffee, and she's like, why is the floor all wet?
Uh-oh.
Well, the dishwasher had decided to implode or explode or whatever, and so there was water all over the kitchen floor.
Puked itself?
I wasn't even aware. I was sitting at the table, wasn't even looking, and there was water all over the floor. So that was a problem. And then we get it cleaned up. I realize, okay, I got to do something with the dishwasher. Then I go sit in the living room, and I'm chilling, just reading a book. And then I hear the washer start, and I was like, I didn't hear her go downstairs. And I was like, Holly, did you start a load of wash? She was like, no. I was like, it sounds like the washing machine's on. So she runs downstairs. The washing machine, even though the power's not on, it's up and running, just doing its thing. And we're like, what? Yeah, so the little computer went on the washing machine, right? So we're like, oh, no.
Does it run entirely off water pressure or something?
No, it runs off electricity. And the power wasn't on, but the washing machine was on.
It actually runs off of Bondar presence.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Welcome to the last hour, people.
Can we do a special episode where we do an exorcism of Rick's dishwasher
yes.
and washing machine?
So yeah. She says, so I'm like, all right, look, let's just go to Lowe's. Let's just get some new appliances.
One that's not cursed.
Yeah. I
bring a shaman with you just to be on the safe
side. Yeah, I fixed these things too much. I'm done fixing them. Let's just get some new ones. And so then she was like, well, you know, the faucet in the bathroom has been a little leaky, letting it drip. So she's like, why don't we look into that and we'll go get the parts? I was like, cool. So I go in there. It's a debacle. I'm like, what is going on? I was like, forget it. Let's just get in the car and go get these things. And so we go and I'm texting them. I'm like, just so you know, I have to replace all appliances in my house and all this is going on because they were coming over for dinner. And so it's just been one thing after another.
Maximum overdrive.
A phenomenal time.
That's really good timing because then you have help.
Yeah. Well he offered. But it's his birthday.
I offered. He said, no, nothing else. I need nothing else from you. Yeah.
I think his birthday's next week.
Your birthday's next week?
Isn't it next week?
It's this week.
Oh, it's this. It's this coming week.
It's the fourth. Yeah.
So I didn't want him
just
to
like
work.
Just like you, Rick.
Huh?
Two Tauruses, right?
That's right. I'm at the very last Aries. Day.
Oh, are you?
Yeah.
I'm on the cusp.
Now he's a Aries.
Yeah, he's Aries.
And then we're Tauruses.
And this means absolutely nothing.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Aries just started. Sorry.
Yes.
My brain. Aries just started and will carry us through the end of April.
For the
and
record,
then you start on that. Yeah, okay.
Astrology means nothing unless you're a Pisces.
The joke. I
or a Scorpio.
I was actually. Let me go ahead and do a little plug for Tiziana's Notes from the Other Side because she has an entire study on astrology in the Bible. Yeah. We talked about it. We went through. There was four or five episodes.
It was a four part.
It was actually
series,
fascinating.
Yeah, it was a very
and then
good.
The
it
last
was,
one was an interview with Jessica Lignato, who's that like was, one of the premier. She's got the number one astrology podcast on Spotify.
And
I
such
still
a cool
listen to her. She's
person.
Fantastic.
She was a cool person.
She is such a cool person. Yeah, I love her cool. show. But
especially when the Jordy McChristians don't even know that the zodiac was embroidered
on the temple on veil
the,
or whatever
the veil.
There's been excavations that have you know the 12 signs of the zodiac like on the
there
floors
was something
of
that
certain,
I heard. I think it was Derek Lambert from MythVision
temples and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Said that it was on the floor of the synagogue that was in the town right next to Nazareth
mm-hmm.
in the synagogue.
Yeah,
it's pretty interesting. Yeah. So they were aware of it. Anyway, let's get back to our guests.
Not really,
shall we? Huh?
Not really.
Not really what?
They don't know about it.
They don't know about it?
No, they don't.
They don't know about it like you know about it.
Yeah, like you know about it.
Or like our newspapers know about it every morning and tell us how it works. So anyway.
No, they cut that section out every morning before they pick it up. Or they burn it one of the two.
Right. So Alan, I thought it would be a good idea to introduce you to our audience, you know, to let you know because in my circles, I would say most of the people who are like fundamentalist Christians that I know, like a lot of my friends, when they know my eschatological position, some of them would now say, you're out of orthodox, you're heretical, you're no longer a Christian. So I've had that happen in my life. And then also even within these eschatological circles, we're beating the hell out of each other about who's right and who's wrong. And so I'm not opposed. Most people would say, Rick, you're not a Christian. That's what they would say these days. But you are definitely saying I'm not. And so but that's not how you started. And so I want the audience to understand.
I want to be clear. When Rick says I'm not, he is doing it from the guest's perspective.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah,
he's not saying that this guy walks up to him every day and it's like, you're not a Christian.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you knew Rick well enough.
No, but so Alan, but that's not Alan's experience. Alan and I have had a lot of time to talk and I've learned a lot about him. And so I want you to introduce yourself to the audience. Just let's start from birth. And
let's go all the way.
I want a minute
by
minute.
If you could remember your conception, that would be perfect.
That would actually be awesome. But if you can do a minute by minute of coming through the birth canal and entering into the world.
Yeah.
No, but talk to me about like the kind of worldview that you were born into.
All right. So I was raised in a fundamental Christian home. It was the Slavic Church of Christ variety, but the Slavic version. Slavic Church of Christ, for those who don't know, hold the position, essentially one of its distinctives is that baptism is required to be saved. And by that, water baptism is what they mean. And the Slavic Church of Christ holds that view as well. But, you know, it was very fundamental. And at that particular church, you know, the pastor would would preach the sermon, but it would be done in three different languages. Hmm. So it was, you know, English first or Slavic first or Russian first or whatever language or Polish.
They do all three of them every time?
Every time.
Wow.
In the same sermon. Every other sentence. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So why, just out of curiosity, why were you even in a Slavic church?
Okay, great question. So my parents are from different parts of the world. My mom is from Argentina. My dad is from Russia. His dad was from Germany, which that's a cool story, how they got him, his family, his dad got his family out of Germany during the Holocaust regime, Hitler regime. It was really cool stuff, but we won't get into that today. But my grandparents are Polish and Ukrainian. Yeah. I'm a melting pot. I am New York.
Yes.
gotcha. So we went to that Slavic church, and that's how I was raised, but it was a very fundamental. I don't know how fundamental the average Slavic Church of Christ, not Slavic Church of Christ, how fundamental the regular Church of Christ is typically, because I've never been a part of one, but the Slavic Church of Christ, at least this one, was extremely fundamental, or at least it was just my parents, I don't know. You know, the kind of thing where going to movies, that's definitely not, you can't go to movies because you'll end up sinning. There's no
Any
doubt
of
about
them?
No movies.
No
movies. Zero movies.
No, you don't go to movies.
What about plays?
Okay. Plays?
Commercials.
What about watching commercials?
Yes.
I don't know.
I'm just like, trying to figure out where the line is.
We're like, digging in.
Watching TV was a very limited thing in our home.
Yeah.
So if I was to watch TV, gosh, I got to be honest, I don't even remember watching TV as a kid.
Wow.
I know you think, I was like, wow. Like, and part of the problem for me is I have, and we're going to get into that. There's so many things that I feel like I was robbed of growing up as a Christian that I've tried to shut a lot of it out of my head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I don't want, when I think about past things that just make me sad, it just makes me sad. Uh-huh. And I don't want that feeling. So
sure.
I've just learned to like forget a lot of things. So when people ask me some questions, I'm like, huh, I don't remember doing that. And it might be because I just, you know.
It might be that you disassociated because you were in a high control religion that was traumatizing and shaming.
What she said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's exactly.
That, yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Hi,
so,
hi, welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So no movie, you know,
yeah.
rock and roll completely out. You know, Bon Jovi was a Satan worshiper.
We had CD burning parties at my church.
Yeah. And we would watch this Geraldo episode where they play music backwards and that's Satan talking to you. And I'm like, who does that? Like, mm-hmm. you know, who sits around and plays music?
Well, which sinner decided to watch Geraldo?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Good point, too. Yeah. But you know, that sort of thing was just really, really strict. You know, eventually my parents loosened and they were like, okay, Christian music's okay. So like, not all of it, you know, the heavy metal stuff took a long time to get to, but you know, like DC Talk.
I was just going to say,
I was huge in DC Talk.
DC Talk,
Newsboys, you know.
Yeah,
Oh, yeah. So Striper
Jars
came
of clay.
Later.
Oh, Striper.
Striper was later.
Striper never came.
Oh. Yeah.
That was just out. I got to White Cross. That's about it. See, nobody even knows who that is.
I don't know who they are.
Oh, yeah.
You know
it's
who
like
they are?
Like heavy metal version
White
of Christian.
Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. They were decent men. But,
I mean, if you played them backwards, you got to hear the Holy Spirit.
Holy Spirit, that's right. That's right.
That's awesome.
But Holy Spirit was possessed by the devil, so it didn't really help.
You know.
But eventually that loosened, you know, so I ended up in a rock band in my head, but it was a Christian rock band, you know, and me and my friends, you know, we were decent as, you know, kids, you know, it was fun. But I would want to wear Argyle socks and, a flannel pullover, you know, because it was just trying to be stylish, and that was like considered, you know, evil. You can't dress like that. That's not appropriate.
That's a hippie.
And I don't know how much of that had to do with religion in that case, as much as it was my mom's social environment.
What years of your life? Like, how old are you? What is, like, give me a decade so I can place this in my own mind.
A decade. Goodness, man.
Yeah, like, when were you born?
I was 77.
Okay.
So,
so this is all happening in, like, the late 80s, early 90s,
this
period of time. So this is also when purity culture is a huge part, not only of Christian culture, but in the world at large, that whole True Love Waits movement that was being perpetuated in like the national schools and stuff. So that also was something that was like happening because I was born in 81. That was something that our generation really growing up Christian, but yeah, the abstinence only education, that was happening like not just in Christianity, but like in the public school system. And so we, and I'm pointing to Alan and I, because I've now decided that we're all in the same team, that he and I are on the same team. But we were dealing with all that at the same time.
Yeah. Silver ring thing. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And so, yeah, so that's interesting. It'd be, you know, I'm curious too, because you said, you know, how much of that was the Slavic and how much of that was culture. I would be curious too, like how much of that pressure to not even wear Argyle socks was like part of this particular brand of fundamentalist Christianity, or how much of that was being influenced by this larger purity movement at large happening within fundamentalist Christianity and American culture at the time.
Right. No, it makes sense. And a lot of it... There was this mentality that if you dress a certain way, you're just going to automatically act like these evil rock stars that go out and have sex and drink, and that's all they do with their life.
If it came from Wet Seal, you're losing your virginity.
That's right.
What part of country are you in at that period of time? Because we're actually the same age.
So I'm growing up in Maryland.
Okay.
Baltimore, Maryland.
All right. Tiziana, you could have changed my life with that like 35 years ago.
If I'd have just given you some Wet Seal clothes to wear.
Oh, my God.
I'm so sorry, Andy. Man. I was too busy trying to stay out of the mall, you know?
Well, you know something funny? Interestingly, so jump ahead like to when I'm a youth pastor just for a second. So I would take my teens to the Silver Ring thing, and it started out for the first number of years, you know, because of the purity culture. Mm-hmm. We were teaching that, and it was like, yeah, this is a good thing, and kids were being impacted. And then, like, I don't know what happened, but then just one year they decided that it would be a really good idea to do a dance party after the Silver Ring thing. And it was really uncomfortable. Girls are all dancing on the tables, and, you know, I'm like, this doesn't seem to fit the message you
don't just know that you thought this one through, folks. Yes.
It was so bizarre. I'm scratching me and my leaders look around. We're like, I think we're out of here.
I, like, legitimately signed a contract. Had like a marriage ceremony where my dad gave me a ring.
Yep.
All this kind of stuff. Like, that didn't f me up. Oh, no. Excuse me, sorry. That didn't f me up later on in my life. That wasn't some weird edible nonsense being threaded into my poor tiny subconscious. Mm-hmm. Weird.
I signed a I promise not to smoke cigarettes vow that came out of the back of a comic book and mailed it to someone because their address was on it and I was supposed to. And I legitimately felt bad about that when I smoked.
Imagine how I felt like, when I had sex.
Wow. And this was like out of the back of out of the back of like Spider-Man or something, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Man. Yeah, I didn't have any of those experiences.
There's a lot of those really expensive comic books now that are messed up because we tore out those little ads and mailed them off.
Man.
But anyhow, so you're in a rock band. You're fighting the sin of Argyle socks.
Yep. Fighting the sin of Argyle socks and plaid shirts. So that was pretty much my upbringing. You know, if you drink a drink, just even a sip, it automatically leads to dancing, and dancing leads to sex. So you never drink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, what?
Capital P, that rhymes with pool, right?
Do you know why?
You need to tell them it does not work that good.
Yeah, right away. Yeah, well, it didn't work for me anyway, because, I mean, I remained pure, Tiziana. What was wrong with you?
Well, yeah. That wasn't my fault.
True.
Yeah. Yes.
So that was my upbringing. Like I said, it got less and less strict over the years, and suddenly, you know, there were some things I was allowed to do, and then it got more lenient. And I was always an inquisitive person, as you know, and as I write my book, I have this need to resolve puzzles. When things don't add up, I'm like, that doesn't, I have to find the answer. It just doesn't set well with me to just let things be like, eh. So I started to question some of these things. I was like, God never changes, right? So why is it this was a rule then, but now 10 years later, suddenly it's not that strict, and now this is okay, but then it was not. That started to really bug me. I was like, something's not adding up here. So I started to really move away from the fundamental, you know, Christianity. I started to like really look at the Bible and what it taught. And boy, did I just kind of took off from all of that and, you know, went the entire opposite extreme. Like, where did we get all these rules? You know, it doesn't even add up. There's nothing in the Bible about no drinking, no smoking, no, you know, whatever. So it's just, you know, don't go to movies. Like,
oh, it's there. It's all interpretation.
I would even argue there's not a whole lot of control around sex and sexuality, honestly, outside of virginity. Hmm. How a woman loses her virginity is highly regulated against. And then adultery, which is having sex outside of marriage, and then fornication, which has maybe more to do with the party element, which may or may not preclude consent. Mm-hmm. But like regular consenting adults were banging all the time outside of marriage, and nobody said anything about it. Like Samson and Delilah, nobody said anything about it.
Right.
Tamar dressing as a prostitute to sleep with her father-in-law. And Judah says what she did was righteous. Rahab, a prostitute. Like, it's really weird. I think that we've created, I think purity culture has extrapolated a lot of things.
Is this one of those things that we scraped off like the Romans or something and then like pushed it into Christian
no, the Romans
culture?
Didn't know.
It was like,
not necessarily.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's, we don't need to go down that rabbit hole. But what I'm trying to say is like, there is so much that we say, the Bible says this, 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 and this, but it's cherry picking a specific verse without looking at any context. If you read the book of Leviticus, all of the sexual purity laws in Leviticus are telling a man who they can and can't have sex with. There are only two that tell a woman who she can and can't have sex with.
Mm.
Because those laws are about controlling men and helping them understand who you can and can't have access to. Because in ancient times, if you didn't have that, Carter, you are giving me this look, like this completely confused look.
No,
like you
just
think
listen.
Maybe I'm full of shit, but
no,
but,
no, I'm listening.
But there are two for women. Number one, women don't sleep with animals. And number two, don't sleep with somebody else's husband. But the rest of them are men. Don't sleep with your sister. Don't sleep with your father's wife. Don't sleep with your father's sister. Don't sleep with your mother's sister. Don't sleep with whatever, right? And then, you know, like again, we can talk later on about divorce and this, that, you know, you commit adultery, blah, 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 blah. But those laws are, but the fact that they're all telling men who just making sure men know who they can and can't have access to is more about controlling, and creating parameters when there's a very, very strong power differential.
Sure.
That's what it is.
By extrapolating the way that the church did when we came up,
yeah,
they've extrapolated to the nth degree, and now we're...
Now you're not allowed to have sex.
At all.
Period. But I honestly don't think that if God... I really don't believe that's appropriate way to communicate God's desires and beliefs around sex and sexuality to modern children. I don't.
Yeah.
I think it's really unhealthy. But I think it's dangerous.
But by reading your book, I know when you said you went, you know, really far, you know, by the time you get to the book, but that's not where you were in your life, because now you start reading it for yourself, but you don't leave Christianity at that point.
No, no, goodness, no. I didn't leave Christianity till 5 years ago, 6 years mm-hmm. ago, something like that. Did Leviticus have anything about movies?
Yes.
Yes. That's one thing I will say. Thou shalt not visit R-rated movies.
I think it says something
about PG, I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah, I think that's definitely the last chapter, I believe.
What if your self-help coach was your captor? What if empowerment meant obedience? And a colored sash meant you belonged to someone. This is the true story of Nexium, a personal development company that promised growth and delivered control. We're going inside the minds behind the headlines. Keith Raniere, the so-called genius who weaponized belief. Nancy Saltzman, the therapist who professionalized submission. And Allison Mack, the actress who helped brand women into silence. We'll hear from survivors, whistleblowers, and the families who fought to bring the truth to light. This isn't just a cult story. It's a case study in how ambition, psychology, and charisma can become chains. Listen to our new series of Sashes and Slaves, coming soon only on Patreon. Go to www.patreon.com/theburrowsofberea.
Do we know, when we're talking about that sort of stuff, do we know what verses we're basing that on? Because, like, conceivably, they could say something about plays.
Well, the whole idea was don't be like the world.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Right? So they derived this whole... It was almost like, you remember the verse in the Bible, for whatever word you say, you'll be judged, and whatever word you say, you'll be justified,
mm-hmm.
right? They took that, and they all of a sudden, that means don't swear. So you're judged, but you're going to hell, because you know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of stretches, but it's preconceived ideas we already have because of upbringing and culture and church you're raised in or whatever, and you read stuff into the Bible. We know that. We all do that.
We call it eisegesis.
Sure, it's eisegesis. And no matter how much you try to be careful about that, if there's stuff already in the back of your head, you tend to just get to verses, like how many people get to Matthew 16, 27, 28, and just read through it, not even paying attention to it, because we don't often pause to think about what each verse is saying. And the Bible's so vast, how can you consistently? Mm-hmm. You know, it takes time. So,
and that, those verses he's talking about, for those standing here will not taste death until you see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. And whenever you're, you know, when you're holding on to, like, for example, dispensationalism, you know, we throw this 2,000 years later, and this Matthew is one of the biggest eschatological gospels I consider anyway. And by the time you get to the end of that book, he's saying this generation and all that stuff. So you're talking from that preterist perspective at this point in your life.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to go down a preterist path. But that's the way. But fortunately for me, you know, like I said, my parents did start to loosen. My first movie, my dad took me to, actually. It was a little older than my early teenagers. Indiana Jones.
Oh, that's a good one.
And the Temple of Doom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. That's a great movie.
I was scared to death.
Kalima.
Yes. I had to close my eyes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I like you. I love those baby snakes. That was fun.
Dude, when he took the guy's heart out of his chest.
Oh, yeah,
I was
it's terrifying. You're like this, and your dad's like, this is why Lord tells you not to watch movies.
I told you.
You've been infected by Satan.
I'm going to bring you to the worst possible movie. He'd be like, see?
Still, the worst part of that movie is where they exit the bedroom and go through the bug infested.
Oh, right.
Well, right
hallway,
before. Right
that's worse than anything else
you think?
To me.
Well,
to
right,
me.
Right before that, Indiana Jones fills up the statue part.
Oh, yeah.
In order to open the door.
That was Raiders, though, wasn't it?
That was Raiders of the Lost Ark, though, wasn't it?
No, it was Temple of Doom.
Oh, was that Temple of Doom?
Yeah, because in order to get into to that tunnel, they
got
to open the door.
Right.
That bug room always bothered me.
Yes.
Yeah.
The heart was too, like, the heart, just, like, cartoonish. So it was cool, but it didn't do that thing to me like that. You know what I mean?
Cartoonish? Dude, Star Trek was dope with their cardboard cutouts when I was a kid. Come on, man. Jeez, you were too advanced for your time. No wonder you got all this technology.
Yeah, so was this like a moment, like kind of the way that the Mennonites will let their girls go off and to the world and just do whatever so that they'll come back? Is that what your dad's doing here? Is he trying
to... No, I don't think he had any motivation like that.
Just to have fun with his son?
I think they just genuinely changed.
How many siblings do you have?
I mean, their parents were really strict, you know what I mean? So they eventually had some changes. How many what?
Yeah, was it just you or did you have siblings?
I had one older sister by 2 years, I think, 2.5 or something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, so now your dad has changed a lot. You're in your early teens and you're experiencing things that were different. It's made you think, why now? Like, why are all these things changing?
Well, I've been consistently changing my opinion of God and theology and Christianity since I was a kid,
right?
As you know my story. I went through a whole gambit of different theological views, ultimately landing on full preterism, covenant creation, and then I got out completely and ended up in atheism, even though none of those directly were my reason for becoming an atheist, but we'll talk about that as we get through the day. But it was almost like I think I wreaked a lot of strain on my parents. Like, I think they were just struggling to keep up with me their whole life, and just like, it was too fast. I was just fat. I was constantly moving, constantly changing my theology, and they were old school. They had one view. It was dispensationalism, you know, Slavic church, get baptized, you know, whatever. And then here I am, like, taking off. And everybody else in their life's just kind of, like, sticking around. You know, they're not... And here's their son, black sheep, just off and running. So I think I had a lot of pull for them. I pulled them along, but never fast enough to keep up with me. So there was always tension with us, you know? Having theological discussions was never fun at home. It always turned into a fight. So we just had to get to a point where we were like, we don't talk God, we don't talk theology, especially now that I'm an atheist. We cannot have a conversation.
Yeah, no.
So that's out. So I've just never really had the opportunity to have those conversations with my parents. The closest one that I could have deep ones with was my brother-in-law. So we had some, but that was about it. But he married in, so.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you went so far as becoming a pastor.
Yep.
You went to school too, right?
I did. I started off at Word of Life Bible Institute, which was a very fundamental Bible institute. You know, you can't walk on the grass. You have to stay 6 feet away from any girl. Are we chasing a bug? Like, what's going on here?
Sorry, I'm trying to find my water because I'm trying not to cough.
Oh, no, you're okay. I wasn't sure if I should be picking up my legs too.
No,
I was like,
worst. I'm sorry.
Do we all need to raise our legs? I was like,
yes.
No.
I didn't want a mouse crawling at my ankle or something, you know? So, all right.
Well, after the day that Rick has had, we're not sure really what's going to happen.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I'm just as scared as the rest of you.
Yeah, exactly. And just so you know, I did feel like the foundation of this building was starting to lean a little bit.
Yeah, you did.
I'm going to be very annoyed if any of my gear is possessed by a demon.
So I will tell you, though, now that I'm here, it is raining, folks.
Yeah, and that's good.
So that is good.
That is good. Yeah,
we need some major wildfires.
That is good.
So, World of
Life,
and then
that's only the third seal right now.
Well,
right.
I'm just curious. So, you're having this experience, you know, you're in this fundamentalist church, you're asking all these questions, you are digging to the bottom of things, you're changing your theology around, but somehow, even in the midst of all of that, it didn't affect what, like a love for God or a desire to be a Christian or a love for Jesus. Because you ended up obviously going to seminary anyways.
Yeah, well, quite the contrary. It did the opposite. It made me far more passionate for God because the more I studied and made sense of the Bible and was able to overcome these loopholes and these issues that I was struggling with, rather than walking away and saying, "Ah, this stuff's stupid," I found answers in the Bible that actually fit pieces of the puzzle, like Matthew 16, for example.
Yeah.
You know, when full preterism, I was like, "This is amazing." Yeah. I was like, "This makes sense. God is more glorious than ever. He did exactly what he said he would do," you know? So I just became far, far more passionate for the glory of God than I ever was before the previous theology. So it was just consistently growing.
Now, that might be a little bit forward in advance where we're at with you joining seminary, right?
Yeah, okay. So seminary, I went to Word of Life, the strict one, and then went to Philadelphia College of the Bible is what it was called at the time. It is now called Cairn University. Then I went to Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary, which is in Pittsburgh. It was the, what do you call them? The ones that sing the hymns only and don't have music?
That's Churches of Christ.
That's Church of Christ too? Mm-hmm. Okay. So it was that view, Covenanters, I think they're called or something. Like
yeah,
that.
The Covenanters. I've heard of them.
I hope I'm not jumping ahead, but are you moving because of the questions that you can't answer? Or are you moving different, or is that you're just progression?
Increasing your education. Why are you going to different schools?
Yes.
Because as my theology changed, I would move to a school that would make sense in the, you know, that would be teaching me.
It would basically change in the middle of seminary.
No. So the first two schools, they were college.
Okay.
So Word of Life was college, very, very dispensational. And I loved it because at the time I was still learning from professors and they were making sense of things that, you know, I wasn't understanding. So that was cool.
Was there any fear that you wouldn't make it to graduation?
Not there.
Okay.
No, not there. No, that was fine. There was just fear that I would get kicked out because I walked in the grass too many times or something. or I did security, which was a night shift position because everybody had to do a ministry there that was required. So you had to serve, and that's how you paid your tuition at that school. So I would work security, and I wouldn't get back in the dorm until like 4 a.m., and then we have to be up at our desk at 6 a.m. studying the Bible, and that was mandatory. So sometimes I'd come in, and I'd be so tired, I would just, you know, throw my shirt on my bed and lay down. Well, an RCA would come in, find that shirt, and write me a demerit, because you have to hang it on the hanger every time. And I'm like, seriously, dude?
Wow.
It was that strict. It was absurd. But I will say, as absurd as it was, there were some cool life principles I learned from. I'm a really clean guy. You know, I hear that from my partner all the time. She's like, "Man, you're a clean guy. It's amazing." So I learned a lot.
It's because it was beat into me with the Bible.
Yeah, it was beat into me. Yeah, exactly.
I love that. I almost can hear a Saturday morning cartoon character in that voice.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Snagglepuss.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I went to Philadelphia College of the Bible. Me and all my friends went there. That I grew up with, the same guys that I was in the band with. So the band broke up because I went to college and everybody went their own ways. And then we ended up at the same school and we're like, the band!
Yeah.
We brought it back together again and that was a lot of fun. So we had something to do through college. But
we're getting the band back together.
We're getting the band back straight. That's right, absolutely. Don't touch my drums.
That's drum stepbrothers? Is that a stepbrothers?
Yes, yeah, yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. But there's drums, a reason why you don't want to touch them.
Right, exactly. At Philadelphia College of the Bible, I think all of us made some serious theological shifts. We had really good professors, and they were a lot of fun, but there was also things as we were maturing more in our mentality as we became older, and so we were able to question things more on our own a little bit better than we did. I went complete Calvinist while I was at Philadelphia College of the Bible, and it was a dispensational school, very not Calvinist. So
Oh, wow.
There's your free will version. So somehow I ended up there.
So they weren't worried about the grass anymore there. They were really getting, if they knew you were becoming a Calvinist, right. You become a serious issue.
Right. Well, fortunately, that wasn't one of the things you're not allowed to believe. That's not against the Apostles' Creed. So
at that point, are you just like, I was always going to walk on the grass at one
That's
point.
That's right. Yeah,
there was no way I could avoid it.
That's right.
That's a good point, Andy.
Hey,
good point.
At PCB, I walked every class on the grass just to prove a point.
It was God's will.
But, you know, during PCB day, so all of us started to shift. Several of me and my friends, I think we all pretty much became Reformed while we were at PCB, which was very interesting, because here they are teaching very strict dispensational theology, and we're all becoming Reformed, and they're scratching their heads saying, what are we doing? It's like, what are we doing wrong? It's like, doesn't make any sense.
It's because you were reading the Bible.
Yes.
But here's a funny story for you. You'd appreciate this, because as a full preterist, one of my teachers, I remember, came into a class one time, and they were going to teach the eschatological views.
Hmm.
He got on the board, and so this semester, we're going to learn about premillennialism, blah, 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 explained it, give some high points. Then there's amillennialism, blah, blah, gave some high points. Then there's postmillennialism, gave some high points, right? And they said, there's this view called full preterism. We don't need to waste our time in that, because it's just ridiculous.
And you were like, let's get in there.
Which one do you think out exactly?
Yeah.
I was like, I want to know what that one is. You know, yeah. You're scared of that one. I can tell you're scared of that one. They just just put it aside, right? Oh, this one was, nobody believed this one after World War II. That was basically what he said about it. Like, okay. So anyway.
By the way, there was something I was fascinated about. You did a talk with Dr. Sam Frost just like last Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And in that, he came here. So we all know Dr. Sam Frost there. But you had said something in that interview about full preterism. You said, if I were to be a believer, I would still be a full preterist. You even said that. I was like, that's interesting.
Correct. Yeah. That's where at least I would enter back in, because that's the last version that I studied.
Okay.
And as of now, I don't have much interest to really study deep the Bible anymore. So I doubt I'm going to advance to another view. But
so I have a really, you know, really long reach to make, but I'm going to make it. It's interesting that if that is true, that preterism, full preterism, would disappear after about World War II or thereabouts, because that is a time when the idea of things being complete and there not being the things that come with dispensationalism right after World War II, or around World War I, World War II, that would be a time when in your mind you would be like, there has to be something better.
Yeah, I mean,
well, he obviously confused postmillennialism with full preterism.
Okay. So that's not necessarily even true.
Yeah, because full preterism wasn't even a popular view until years ago. So
I thought it was just a couple years ago.
Yeah,
really.
So he just confused, but nonetheless.
Well, there goes my theory. It was fun while it lasted.
Or it could be my reconsolidated memory remembering it wrong.
Yeah,
maybe he did say it correctly.
But you bring a good point up, because the restorationist movements happened just prior to 1914, like World War I and all that. And then after World War II is whenever Israel became a nation in 1948, mm-hmm. which kicked off, really helped those restorationists, especially on the dispensational side, really begin to lock in and say, okay, now we're in the last days.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, those kinds of things that happen in the world really kick off religious movements, for
yes.
sure.
And plagues. Plagues have that type of effect.
That makes sense.
In the same regard.
Sure.
Where
any,
there's
any, yeah.
Well, wars and rumors of wars.
Yeah.
A third of the earth
pestilence.
Will be burned, a third of the water.
Yeah.
So it's like anytime there's a big upset, people are like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's start writing. I couldn't necessarily say why in certain cases that would, if it was more of what eschatological view would kind of bounce off of that. But like, just saying—
I think what I was thinking, it was postmillennialism, yeah, because— It was after World War I and then postmillennialism, and then World War II happened, and everybody poo-pooed it because obviously the world's getting worse, not better.
Yeah.
I think that was basically what his point was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it was.
So, yeah. So you are, at this point, you and your friends are becoming Reformed. They're asking themselves, what are we doing wrong? And you guys are kind of going your own direction.
Yeah.
So where do you go from there?
But they let us all graduate, at least. And it wasn't a big deal. That didn't end our relationship. So that was cool.
How many points of the Calvinism thing did you make it to?
Oh, I was all five. Later, I made it to all seven. John Piper added two more.
Mm.
Gotcha. I understand.
So I went to all seven. But so now I'm Reformed, and I'm working at a church that is Methodist. It's called Primitive Methodist. That was the and it was a Reformed church. But then I got a job at Evangelical Free Church.
Is that the one that had Primitive Methodist? Is that the one where they used the door for the women and the door for the men? And that's no.
I don't think so. No, I didn't know if you were joking.
No, they do that here. In the churches, like the old Methodist churches, they had an entrance and an exit for gender.
Gotcha. They were Methodist churches. They were of the distinction between primitive and regular Reformed, like Presbyterian churches. They were more of the Lutheran persuasion versus the Calvin persuasion. That was kind of the way they went.
It was the right one.
That's right. The right one. Gotcha. That's the right one. That's funny. But anyway, from there, I started to see post-millennialism at that church. And I was like, man, I'm going to get in so much trouble because that was a very different, you know, belief.
Now, where did you see that from?
Well, I was reading a lot of R.C. Sproul.
Okay.
And he was making a lot of sense. And when he showed all the time statements and showed how partial preterism was correct, I was like, man. And then post-millennialism just added up. It just worked. It seemed to make sense of the text. So that's where I ended up. Lost my job there because of that. Also, the regeneration preceding faith idea at that church, it was faith precedes regeneration. So because I switched them, that was a big no-no.
How did that make you feel when you lost your job? Like, did that hurt your feelings, or did you were you like, I'm cool with it because I know I believe this?
You know, I mean, I was cool with it at the end. I was frustrated because it seems to be the pattern in every church that I lost my job in because my theology changed. What frustrated me, so I'll say this now, and then I don't have to repeat it when I get to the other church experiences, but there was never a, we know that you have a good, solid mind. And so let's sit down and dialogue about this. It was just, we don't need this in this church. We already know what we believe. You're out.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So I would
said every person in a chair like that has told us in the same regard.
Absolutely.
They're like, man, you're really picking up onto something. Can we talk about it?
Right. Sure.
They're like, no, you need to get out of here.
Or at least, like, you're valuable to us. I'm sorry this is happening. So we'd at least like to hear what you're saying so we can.
We love you as a person and we care about you and we know you. So we'd like to have a conversation instead of like, now you are immediately not one of us.
Right.
And so every other thing about you that would have connected us to one another as loving friends.
Right.
Deuces.
Which is interesting. If you could ever know the truth. Was it things that certain people didn't like about, and I'm not saying you in general, but the consensus of the people that have that same experience is like when you finally begin to change, they're like, aha, I knew there was something I didn't like about you. There was something that now I can put that together with.
I think it works the other way.
Yeah.
Something happens, somebody changes, and somebody else is like, I knew there was something I didn't like about you. That's not true. There wasn't. But now they can they post-date the idea.
I agree with that, but that's like
validity.
They're like trying to validate something.
I think you're saying the same thing, actually.
Probably.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are saying the same thing. Like, and that is true. Man, you have the best mind in the church. And pastor even sends everybody to me with theological questions. Oh my goodness, we trust you so great. Soon as the flip happens, I knew there was something off about you. You're like, no, you didn't.
Yeah, exactly.
No, this is new. You just got to look like you knew something was off. I just wish I would have said something. You know, whatever. But anyway, so I knew at that point, and mind you, I had never been in that Reformed world. I had never been in anything outside of a dispensational church. I grew up in one. And I've worked in them. And so here I am, and I'm like, I'm thinking I don't know what to do with my life now. So all I want to do is be a pastor, and I have nowhere to go. I didn't realize there was good churches out there that were Presbyterian because, you know, we were always taught, oh, those evil Presbyterian churches, they just believe that you eat Jesus and, you know, whatever, the Lord's Supper, and that you can just go to heaven because you baptize your child. You know, I mean, that's the way you always taught it. So I was like, man. But I also knew that was my only option. So I was like, I'm going to start looking for Presbyterian churches because I didn't know what to do. So anyway, lo and behold, it was nothing like I was taught.
Right.
Nothing at all. It was totally different. And what I discovered is birds of a feather flock together. So there's thousands of people in that world, you know? So I entered that and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. You know, I didn't feel alone anymore. It was incredible, you know, until you become a full preterist. And then it's like, oh, you're not one of us. And you're like,
now we can be alone again.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, so every time it's like this pattern, well, you're out now because you believe something just a little bit different than us. And it's just like, man.
For all the loners out there, if you want to continue being a loner, but do want to investigate the church, become a full preterist.
Yes.
Yeah. And send your emails to Andy.
She's like being a loner.
And send your emails to Andy.
Nobody sends me emails. I've stopped checking.
They don't send you emails?
I haven't checked in a while, but I did check for a while. Okay. I'm very sad.
Yeah, somebody. You'll get some rude ones. They'll come. Don't worry.
So funny.
I think they've all forgot it, the addresses.
There was a couple of Presbyterian churches I worked at. The first one I worked at was great. I had to leave there not because of theological problems, just philosophical differences and just things weren't working out financially. But so that was a good church. I kind of missed those days. It was fun. Best youth ministry I ever had there. It was freaking awesome. Great friends, you know, the whole nine yards. Little small town.
Yeah.
Little small town called Carmichael's. Two lights in the whole town. You know, as fast as you drive in, you're driving out. You know, it was great. And that's not even my thing. I don't even like that. I like cities. So not like inner cities, but rural.
Right,
so
right.
Like here would be great. Anyway, that's beside the point. Ended up at another church, Westminster Presbyterian, youth pastor there. And that was in Florida. That's how I got to Florida. Was there for 7 years. Took the youth ministry from 5 kids when I got there to 70 when I left. Didn't teach full preterism at all, even though eventually I ended up there, but I never taught it. But I did go to my pastor and the elders, and everything just became a mess. You're out, you know. There's a whole story there. We don't need to get into it. You can read about it in my book if you want. But the oust, don't say bye to the teens. Don't talk to the parents. You can't do anything. Clean out your office today.
If you guys want to hear stories like it, just listen to all of the testimonies that I have on here with full preterism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They all have the same one. Yeah. It's the same one. They get a crisis of conscience. They decide to mention it to the pastor, and then they send them packing.
Yep. Or get pregnant out of wedlock. That'll do it too.
That'll do that in any church. That's cool. Yeah,
that'll do it too. They'll kick you right the F out and not let you talk to anybody either. Yeah.
So I started a preterist church because there were none. That was my last option. It was the train ended.
When you about know? Is this approximately?
That was about.
Hey. Oh my goodness. Just tell me what was in style. What sort of jeans were you wearing?
Oh, what sort of jeans was I wearing?
How tight were they?
Jordan I'm wearing now. Huh? Same thing I'm wearing now.
Yeah. Okay, just so you know,
CD was coming out at the time.
For the record, that means true. I have never been stylish, in case you're wondering. I never cared.
You know what? For the audience, he's wearing a perfectly respectable pair of jeans.
They're not skinny jeans, and that's a positive.
They're not skinny jeans, and they're not the overly baggy ones that look a little too youthful.
Yep.
It's fine.
But they're rhinestoned on the back.
The only thing out of style back then that I'm wearing now is the atheist shirt. That was definitely out of style at that point.
Is that actually an atheist shirt?
It is. It's an atheist symbol. Yeah.
What is it? I don't even know it. I can't even see it.
Andy, you're not part of the club? Yeah, what is wrong with you, bro?
Star Trek.
Yeah. I thought it looked like Star Trek.
This is an atheist shirt.
It's a Star Trek shirt.
Get it.
Whatever, people. Jeez. Is it really? Do I have to go back and... I'm so embarrassed. I'm wearing Star Trek.
So you started a preterist church. This is the late 90s, early 2000s?
So yes, let me think here. Yeah,
that was my guess, Rick. Let's see.
It ended in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, wow. So take it back 10 years. 2000 and, it would have been 2007 that I started it. That sounds right to me.
Wow. A little wrong, but not wildly off. But that's almost a decade, I guess. So, meh.
Still in the same area?
Still in the same area.
Okay.
Florida.
Yeah.
We didn't get to the transition from coming from the north down, so.
Oh, well, after school, he was moving from school to school, and then he started talking about being a pastor in different places.
Yeah, so I went to that first Presbyterian church, and that was in Pennsylvania, that little town called Carmichael's.
Yep.
And I didn't get kicked out of there. It was nothing bad. It was a great church. It just different.
So you end up going there and you start a preterist church in Florida.
No. So from there, I went to Westminster Presbyterian in Florida.
For 7 years.
For seven years. That was the church that I last worked at.
Gotcha.
Presbyterian church.
Yeah. As a youth pastor,
that's correct. Grew the church from
5 to 70.
So
he packs his office and then he starts his own preterist church.
And then started my church, yeah.
What's going on in your personal life at this time? Like, are you dating? Are you married?
So I'm married. I've been married. I would have been married since right out of college when I was working my first church, full-time church, Evangelical Free, that I told you about up in New York. I got married there. So she's traveled. She's
ping-ponging with
you the
whole
time. She's ping-ponging with me. Okay. And she's cool as shit. You know, she's just rolling with it. And because she was really intelligent. Like, if I'd show her the text, like, it didn't. I remember being scared to death when I became a full preterist because, you know, we already been lost churches. It was almost becoming like a joke. It was like, we're going to lose this one too. You know, it's just whatever. But at the same time, it was like really painful because every time we moved to a new thing, it just became smaller and smaller and smaller until this time around it was like, uh-oh, what are we going to do now? I have no job. They kicked me out. You know, I was scared to death. But so before I actually told the church, because I had landed on it, and then I was like, this can't be right. And at this time, by the way, I thought I was the only full preterist on the planet. Mm-hmm. I really did. Because I had thought that J. Stuart Russell was dead.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy who I read his book.
So it's just him and me.
It's just him and me. And well, he's dead.
He
so
was
just me.
Dead. He wrote that in the late 1800s.
Yeah, so I'm like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I literally never heard, just like when I was becoming a Presbyterian, I was like, man, what am I going to do?
For our audience, James Stuart Russell is the author of The Parousia.
Yes.
Which is the book that he's talking about. And right. It was revolutionary for its time, honestly.
It was. And I had read it 5 years before I became a full preterist.
Yeah.
He actually helped solidify my partial preterism, and I just couldn't get on board with the new heavens and the new earth.
Yeah, which he doesn't go all the way in that book.
He doesn't. Right. He doesn't do enough with it. So
which any full preterist coming out of the 70s, early 80s, that book was revolutionary to them.
Yeah, for sure.
Because that's their founding part. When they read that book, it changed their life.
Yeah, we
forever.
Learned that from Ed Stevens, because he was talking about Max
Ed
King.
Stevens, and Ed Stevens, my
Don
buddy
Preston,
Lynn.
They were all into that book.
Yeah, that book changed, burned them down.
In the early 80s. Yeah.
But anyway, so here we are. So my ex, she's my ex-wife now. But at the time, so she comes back from visiting her family in Canada. Meanwhile, while she's there, here I become a full preterist thinking, I don't know what to do. But I had studied for like, you know, several nights in a row, you know, all-nighters trying to make sure that what I knew was true. Because So I had studied, I found people online, and I started reading all these horror stories. And I'm like, oh, what am I gotten myself into? I knew. I was like, I'm out again. I don't know how I'm, what am I going to do? So I started to panic. I don't know how I'm going to do what I'm going to do with my life.
Because this is your career. Imagine, getting something true, and then you decide, okay, I'm gonna live to what I think is true, and then your career ends because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
So bizarre.
Very scary too, and I have a wife to support, and I know I'm about to lose a job, and I'm like, but anyway, so I thought surely she's going to leave me over this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, because I had seen all the horror stories about wives leaving their husbands too.
Yeah,
I've heard
a lot of them. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm like, I really thought. Anyway, so she comes back, and I'm like, you know, I'm nervous, and she's in the car, and I said, "Can I show you a verse?" Showed her Matthew 16:27, and I said, "What does that say to you?" And she said, "Sounds like Jesus said he already came back." I said, right, you okay with that? She said, "Well, Jesus said it. I have to believe it."
You were like,
she
"Oh,
was
thank
like,
God.
That's it." Yeah,
and that was it. She's like, "It's in the Bible. It's in the Bible. Jesus said it. That's it." I was like, "Hallelujah!"
Yeah, that's awesome.
So that was cool, man. So that was there was nothing. All the panic, all the worry for nothing. She was instantly on board. So cool. Took a lot of time to study everything, you know, understand it all. But
sure.
She was instantly on board. It was a no brainer for her. It was in there, done. So that was cool. And so, you know, we ended up, like I said, the church kicked me out. So we ended up starting the church. And that's that. It started out as a church called Messiah Reformed Church because a guy named Nelson Kelly Burks, I don't know if you know who.
I've heard of him,
name, yeah. He really helped us out get through that initial process because he knew the pain as well. And he was really, wow, what a mentor he was.
Yeah, I think he's since passed, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of him, but I never got a chance to meet him.
Yep. I was very fortunate to go through all that horrible stuff while he was still alive, so he was able to help me through it. But then we eventually changed our name, to New Covenant Eyes Church because I wrote that book,
mm-hmm.
Reading the Bible with the New Covenant Eyes. Turns out that's a really creepy name for people. When you say "Come to New Covenant Eyes," they're like,
makes me think of like Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah, what are you
like
staring at?
The very
at
end
like,
of that movie.
Yeah, what are you?
That horror movie where he steals his eyeballs.
So I was like, yeah, maybe creative isn't such a great idea. So we just went with Lift Church, and that was that. So that's where we ended up.
Yeah. So, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we wrap this episode? We're going to be doing like two or three episodes here with Alan. So why don't we wrap it up at this point where he has started a full preterist church called the Lift Church. Well, actually, it was New Covenant Eyes. It was horrible.
He's been in Florida for a while. I just want to point that out because I feel like that becomes material.
Yes. He was there. I guess he got there in 2000, and then 2007 you started the church.
Yeah, I had lived there altogether for 18 years.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it turned out being 19 years.
See, that's what I'm trying to figure out. how long do you have to stay in Florida full time before you don't believe in God?
Apparently 19 years. Yeah. Well, actually, it probably would have been 20 because I didn't become an atheist in Florida. So that'll be the next part of the story.
True. We're going to talk a lot about how Disney influenced that, just so we understand.
Anyway. Well, and the Indiana Jones and the
time. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right.
All this is going to come together at some point. Absolutely. We didn't ramble at all.
By the time we get to the
crystal. We never do.
No. Yeah. By the time we get to the crystal skull, it's all done.
It's that's over. Right. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you being here, Alan. This has been good to hear your story. And then I think we're going to get from there to when you became an atheist and then the reasons why you wrote the book. And sure. Then we'll get to me. And that's great because then we can talk about me. And then, anyway, TZ Allen, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure.
Yep. And Andy.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate you being here. Rick.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for driving up, bro. On a Sunday afternoon, he drove all the way up in here.
Oh, yeah.
He brought the rain. I'm gonna say he brought the rain.
Yeah.
I like that. I like to be let off the hook for something. Wait, no, wait. You're giving him the credit for the one. Yeah. You jerk. You just gave him the credit for the one thing I had to bring with me, man.
Oh,
one ecological disaster that we were going to be happy about.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, yeah. Alan. Yeah, Alan said,
and you're
okay.
My fellow, man. You're my fellow atheist. What are you doing, dude?
Alan actually said, okay, man, I've booked the tickets. I said, awesome. And then I got the warning on my phone that the world was on fire. I was like, what's up with this?
When did you fly in? Is it day or night? I want to know if you could see the smoke.
Oh,
did
yeah,
you see
we could.
The smoke?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got out of the plane and I was like, man, it smells like barbecue out here. Yeah. I just wanted to eat the city.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will talk to you guys again next time on the Burrows of Berea. Peace out.
Later.
What if your self-help coach was your captor? What if empowerment meant obedience? And a colored sash meant you belonged to someone? This is the true story of Nexium, a personal development company that promised growth and delivered control. We're going inside the minds behind the headlines. Keith Raniere, the so-called genius who weaponized belief. Nancy Saltzman, the therapist who professionalized submission. And Allison Mack, the actress who helped brand women into silence. We'll hear from survivors, whistleblowers, and the families who fought to bring the truth to light. This isn't just a cult story. It's a case study in how ambition, psychology, and charisma can become chains. Listen to our new series of Sashes and Slaves, coming soon only on Patreon. Go to www.patreon.com/ the Burrows of Berea.